9. Ronan hadn't thought much about the future. This was the way he and Adam had always been opposites. Adam seemed to only think about the future. He thought about what he wanted to happen days or weeks or years down the road, and then he backfilled actions to make it happen. He was good at depriving himself in the now in order to have something better in the later. Ronan, on the other hand, couldn't seem to get out of the now. He always remembered consequences too late, after a bloody nose, a broken friendship, a huge tattoo, a cat with human hands. But his head didn't seem built to hold the future. He could imagine it for just a few seconds until, like a weak muscle, his thoughts collapsed back into the present. But there was one future he could imagine. It was a little bit of a cheat because it was buried in a memory, and Ronan was better at thinking of the past than the future. It was an indulgent memory, too, one he'd never have copped to out loud. There wasn't much to it. It was from the summer after Adam had graduated, the summer he'd spent with Ronan at the barns. Ronan had come in from working on the fences outdoors and tossed his work gloves onto the grass-cluttered rug by the mudroom door. As he did, he'd seen that Adam's mechanic gloves were lined up neatly on top of his shoes. Ronan had already known Adam was inside the house, but nonetheless, the image made him pause. They were just gloves, grease-stained, and very old. Thrifty Adam always tried to get as much wear out of things as possible. They were long and narrow, like Adam himself, and despite their age and stains, they were otherwise impeccably clean. Ronan's work gloves, in comparison, were cruddy and creased and coarse-looking, tossed with carefree abandon, the fingers lassoed over Adam's. Seeing the two pairs tumbled together, a nameless feeling had suddenly overwhelmed Ronan. It was about Adam's gloves here, but it was also Adam's jacket tossed on a dining room chair, his soda can forgotten on the foyer table, him somewhere tossed with equal comfort in the barns, his presence commonplace enough that he was not having to perform or engage with Ronan at all times. He was not dating Ronan. He was living in Ronan's life with him. Shoes kicked off by the door. Gloves off. A future. A good future. One Ronan had always liked thinking about. But the feeling of the lace was still stuck to Ronan. It was hard to shake its insistent dread. It was getting all over the memory of Adam's gloves. It was reminding him how, even though it was a great memory, a great future, it hadn't been enough for Ronan. If it had been enough, he'd still be waiting safely at the barns until it came true. Instead, the lace feeling murmured. He was here, jeopardizing that future more and more with every act. So how much did he really treasure that memory? Not enough to keep it safe.
I trust you enjoyed your dreaming, Bride said.
As Ronan's dream paralysis came to an end, a light came on, revealing the small hunting cabin Bride had brought them to a few hours after the episode at the fast food restaurant. Two decayed deer heads on the wall stared at Ronan with strained expressions. A lamp made of antlers lit a plaid sofa. Ronan had been too stupid with night watch to notice any of these details when they'd arrived. Now they seemed quaint, charming, relieving in their mundanity. The lace was fading. He didn't know how Hennessy had lived with it for so long.
What did you bring back? Bride asked.
The way he asked the question somehow seemed to imply he knew the answer already but wanted to hear them explain themselves. A teacher asking a child to explain their stick drawing. A phone, Ronan said.
A phone, echoed Bride.
An untraceable phone.
A phone, said Bride again.
You sound like a parrot. Yes, a phone. I got a phone.
Why?
Now Ronan was beginning to feel foolish, as if he'd missed a lesson. To call my family?
Do you think it's wise to be looking in the rearview mirror? Bride asked.
There was something both uncomfortable and fatherly about this. Bride treating them like children. Bride knowing this dimly lit path they were on.
Okay, Satan,
said Ronan, and Hennessy laughed hollowly from the dismal plaid couch. Get up, Bride said. Wash off your face. We're going on a walk. Idea. You two go on a walk. I stay here and hate myself, Hennessy said. Put on a coat, Bride replied. It's snowing. His dreamers grumbled and did as he said. The cabin they emerged from was notched into the side of a mountain and looked even more remote and murdery than it had from the inside. There was nothing around it but trees and more trees. The driveway through the woods was barely more civilized than the rest of the forest floor. To Ronan's amazement, it was snowing, lightly, without urgency, but enough to lend the night a peculiar brightness. In front of the cabin, the car was dusted with snow, which made it no more visible than before. It was emotionally hard to see, not literally. Snow and grime didn't matter. Ronan pulled his skull cap down over his ears. Where are we walking to? Bride said. Up. So up they went. These were foreign trees. Unlike the huge oaks and twisted beeches of Lindenmere, Ronan's half-remembered fairy tale trees, these were evergreens. Fat spruces with chunky bark and branchless trunks stretching into a snow-fogged sky kingdom. Still fairy tale trees, but not from a tale Ronan had ever heard. Chainsaw flew above them, her wings strangely audible in the hush as they flapped.
Are we there yet?
Hennessy asked. Up, Bride replied. Up, up. Ronan's calves strained as they headed up the steepening mountain. Here, the snow was thicker, the trees even bigger. The landscape seemed just as dreamy as the desert he'd just left, and as real. Hennessy, he thought, are we still dreaming? She didn't turn her head, so he was awake, or at least he was in his dream alone, with a copy of Hennessy, a copy of Bride. Reality was harder to define now.
Do you know where we are?
Bride asked him. They had reached their destination, a great vast stump that must have once been a great vast tree, larger than any of the others still standing. It was dusted with snow like everything else, which somehow made it seem more alive, not less. Ronan was put in mind of the way the snow dusted the backs of his father's eternally sleeping cattle back at the barns.
Still west far, Hennessy replied. Yeah?
West by God, Virginia, added Ronan, mimicking his old friend Gansey's southern accent before remembering none of these new acquaintances had ever met him. Here in the future, they didn't know about his past. Maybe that was Adam's attraction to it. He felt that prickle of the lace again. Bride said,
yes. Quite nearly in the middle of the National Radio Quiet Zone. Over 10,000 square miles without radio, Wi-Fi, cell phone signal, or microwave ovens. Home of the largest steerable radio telescope in the world and several defunct alien research programs. One of the quietest night skies east of the Mississippi. Can you feel it?
Of course not. Not now that he was awake. The lay power always seemed so clear to dreaming Ronan. Waking Ronan, however, couldn't sense it even a little. In fact, it often felt like waking Ronan loved the things that seemed to actively interfere with it the most. Electricity, engines, motors, gasoline, adrenaline. And then dreaming Ronan, night-washing Ronan, needed a world free of them. Perhaps this was why it was hard to see a future for himself. Bride said there weren't two of him. Bride didn't know.
Can I feel it? Or do I like it? Hennessy asked, because those are different answers.
Bride gazed up at the massive spruces around them. A crawling white mist ghosted up from the light snowfall now, and the tree trunks were marked with little upside-down V's of white where the precipitation had stuck to the rugged bark.
What do you hear?
Nothing, said Ronan.
Nothing.
Nothing. There was no sound of distant trucks. No hum of generators. No slam of distant doors. There was just a soft white silence around these huge trees. Mountain soil was so poor, and yet they'd managed to become massive. Ronan wondered how long it had taken them to perform this feat. Perhaps they grew better in the absence of noise. As if reading his thoughts, Bride said, "They're all so young. Second growth. Beginning of the 20th century, this was all twigs because of logging. Looked like a war zone. Was, even. The army used to fire mortars here. Imagine this place raised and stubbled and smoking the sounds of gunfire." Ronan couldn't. "Yes," Bride said. "Amazing what you can change in a century if you have a purpose. Humankind raised to this place, but humankind also built it back up again. Planted trees, put up fences to keep the cattle out, dragged the rivers into shape where trauma erased them, replaced all the living things that grew along them to hold them in place. Deep down, there are always some that miss it." "Do you really feel nothing at all, Ronan?" Ronan muttered, "Not while awake." Bride went on. "Did you feel how strong the line was when you were dreaming? And that is with it smothered. In the 60s, a dam was built southeast of here that disrupted its energy. But before that, it was strong enough to spill out lay energy into distant tributaries." "Stronger than this?" Hennessy said. She didn't sound pleased. "Come here, both of you," Bride said. "Put your hands on this." They did as he asked. Ronan in his old leather jacket scarred by escaped nightmares. Hennessy in her stolen, smelly coat with the snow caught in the tips of its fur. Bride in the same jacket he always wore, that light gray windbreaker with a light stripe down its arm. All their hands were placed on the ragged edge of the stump. Bride said, "This is one of the originals. It looks dead, but it's just sleeping. The others keep it alive. Beneath the soil, these trees are connected. The strength of one makes the others strong. The weakness of one challenges the others. They value their oldest members, as do I." "How much longer for this video essay?" Hennessy said. "I can't feel my tits." "A little fucking awe would be appropriate," Bride said calmly. "This forest was like your Lindenmere not long ago, Ronan. But its dreamer died, and there was no one to protect it. It is old and hard of hearing, and no dreamers have tried to befriend it for a long time. It is still doing its work on this line. It is a wonder these young silly trees had the thought to keep it alive, to ground it all. But we should be grateful for it." "Thanks for the dream, tree," Hennessy said. "I hated it." "This is a rare ley line in these times," Bride said a little sharper. "Pure, quiet, strong. If that dam miles and miles away didn't exist, it would be perfect. If you cannot bring yourself to wipe that smirk off your face while awake, Hennessy, perhaps you can do it in your dreams. Remember this tree. Find it in dream space next time you close your eyes and remind it of what friendship looks like. Perhaps it will help you remember what you want and help you dream what your mind wills." "I don't think my mind should do what it wills," Hennessy said. Ronan could still hear the lace in her voice somehow. Ronan asked, "Does it have a name? The forest?" He saw the question pleased Bride. He saw it pleased him very much. Bride replied, "This tree is called Illidorin." Illidorin. It sounded like a name that belonged with Grey Warren. Chainsaw in one of the branches far overhead let out a little growl call. She could manage a fair number of human words, but this was not one Ronan had heard before.
I brought you here to see Illidorin because I wanted you to see that this is the pedigree of your power, not the world you keep looking over your shoulder at. I thought you were outgrowing old habits, but... Bride shook his head. Given the opportunity to communicate with your family, what do? Dream up phones. The disdain in his voice was sufficient to twist Ronan's guts. Phones, he says, Hennessy mocked. Phones, that portable lifeline, as if... Don't start. Bride cut off her monologue before it could take hold. A human child believes all things are possible. How wonderful. How terrifying. Slowly you are taught what you cannot have, what will not be possible, what you do not have to fear. There is no monster in the closet. You cannot fly. How relieving. How disappointing. But this is the world, isn't it? You believe it. You believe it so thoroughly that even when the box is lifted from around you, you continue to travel in circles no bigger than its walls. A phone. How is it you think I should be talking to Declan if not with a phone? Demanded Ronan. I don't think he really wants to have a one-on-one with, like, some dream balloon with my face projected in it. He just wants a phone call. Does he even want that? Ronan demanded. What? Bride said, do you really think your family understands you? Truly? This world has been built for them so thoroughly that they don't realize it. It has been built to destroy you. So thoroughly that it has never occurred to them. Your goals are fundamentally opposed. So what are you trying to say? Ronan asked. Don't talk to them? Bride's expression softened. Was it pity? It's a warning, not an order. The view in the rearview mirror is often a painful one.
Whoa, mate. Jordan is not in my rearview mirror, said Hennessy.
Then where is she? Bride asked. Why is she not standing in this forest with us? She's a dream. This concerns her too, does it not? And where are your brothers, Ronan Lynch? Where is Adam? They are the brothers and lovers of a dreamer. Is this not their concern too? Did they come with us to save the world for dreamers? No, dreamers are a task for dreamers, they think, not for people like them. They love you, they support you, they wave goodbye as you flee without them, and then they return to their own lives to muddle through without you.
That's a little unfair, Ronan said uneasily.
And can you blame them? Bride went on. A part of them must be relieved they no longer have front row seats watching as the world breaks you. It's hard to die. Harder to watch someone else do it and make no mistake. That's what you two were doing before now, dying in plain sight, inch by inch, dream by dream, drip by drip. You've given them the gift of letting them look away. And I'm just warning you, they might not like you returning that gift for store credit.
Marvelous, Hennessy said, sounding bitter. Wonderful. Inspiring. Got it. We die alone, Bride said.
You have each other. The ley line. Places like this, they are your family, too.
You're wrong, Ronan said. About Adam, anyway.
I'd like to be, Bride replied, but I've met too many humans.
You're wrong, Ronan said again.
Tell me the dream that produced all those wheels, Bride said. Tamquam.
Don't say that again, Ronan said. Then again, you're wrong.
Hennessy muttered something. But when Bride waited for her to repeat it, she just said, I wish I had a cigarette. Come on, Bride said. We have work to do.